I'm Jeff Custer.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight. I'm your host, Yehiyu Suhib, and here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
When you hear that there was one door for exit, how does that happen? What kind of community consultations could have happened?
That was Bishop Banlus Mpumulwana in South Africa, expressing frustration at conditions that contributed to the deaths of 21 teenagers. Details coming up. Also, Sudan has recalled its ambassador in Addis Ababa. These stories and more on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. Moroccan authorities have begun prosecuting 65 immigrants who joined Friday's mass attempt to cross into a Spanish enclave by storming a border post. The incident led to the death of more than 25 migrants. Several news organizations showed video of what appeared to be harsh treatment from Moroccan security forces on black African migrants. VOA could not verify the authenticity of the videos. Iskander Nagash is president and chief executive officer of U.S. Committee on Refugees and Immigrants. Douglas Mpuga reached him in Virginia for a reaction on these developments.
Well, it's a sad situation, but this is not the first time. We have hundreds of Africans that are dying and trying to cross to Europe, you know, from Libya and to go to Italy. We have seen horror, you know, 300-something Eritreans who died, and it's just becoming an ongoing tragedy that we are seeing, you know, Africans, refugees and immigrants trying to enter to Europe. So this is another horrible tragedy that we're seeing, yeah.
The route through Morocco to Spain has not been very popular among migrants from Africa. What do you think? Have they discovered a new way?
Well, maybe. But it has been. There are some upgoing, but the number may not be that high. But, you know, but it has been. I mean, keep in mind, you know, they're trying to go through Morocco, trying to go through Libya, trying to go through Egypt. Some of them died in the Sahara Desert, trying to get to Israel. So it is an ongoing challenge that we see in the days, and you know, the kidnapping and the trafficking, the beheading of African refugees is becoming, unfortunately, normal. You know.
And we've heard of degrading and inhumane treatment of some of them, leading to deaths of others. And it appears both governments of Morocco and Spain are not doing enough to explain what actually happened.
Yeah, as I said, you know, over 3,000 migrants died, you know, in 2021. You know, this is according to the UN. I'm not making it up. But they're not doing, they're not giving them, you know, protection as required by international law. And they died in a horrible date, and sometimes their identity is not known because they have this rigid system where nobody is allowed to come. Well, I think, you know, this is an ongoing crisis. I think the international community has to do something about it. The number is going to go up, you know, because of the crisis in different parts of the country. You know, wars are everywhere, from Chad to Ethiopia to you know, to Somalia and other places. So the number of this migration, refugee migration, is going to continue. And the sad thing is, some of those are dying are also children and women. So this is a sad story, and the international media is not giving it due attention.
In South Sudan, 25 people were killed when soldiers faced off with suspected cattle rustlers in a northwest state plagued by ethnic conflict. A Warup state official told the French news agency AFP that the attack occurred over the weekend in a village in Tonge, North County, in Warup State. The government had sent its forces to recover stolen cattle when they came under fire. The official said 18 soldiers and 7 civilians died, and many soldiers were still missing. Warup State, and particularly Tonge, North County, has been the scene of bloody clashes in recent years between government forces and young armed civilians. Sudan has recalled its ambassador in Addis Ababa to protest what it says was the execution by Ethiopian forces of 7 Sudanese soldiers and a civilian who were captured last week. Ethiopia's foreign ministry has said the facts of the incident were misrepresented and that the deaths were a result of a skirmish between Sudanese soldiers who they said had encroached on Ethiopian land and a local militia. And Sudan's military leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, visited the area yesterday where he said his government would not allow new movements or trespasses into Sudanese land. Cameron Hudson, a senior associate at Center for Strategic and International Studies, discussed these developments with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
We need some official confirmation of what exactly has happened. I think that certainly the Sudanese are in a position where these claims are quite concerning. But let's be honest, neither side in Sudan or Ethiopia have demonstrated that they are good actors right now or that their statements can be believed. We've seen this in the Ethiopian war in Tigray and certainly with respect to the Sudan military's continued atrocities against civilian protesters. Protesters and in Darfur, where they've denied responsibility. So you have essentially 2 armed groups squared off in this disputed area, and really neither of them have a track record to be believed. And so I think we do need some independent confirmation about not just what has happened in this incident, but what is the disposition of forces in this area, and making an assessment about what needs to be done to help mediate the crisis there.
Sudan's military ruler, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, flew to his country's eastern region close to Ethiopia's border. Sudan said it intends to file a complaint against Ethiopia to the UN Security Council and relevant regional and international organizations. How significant are these actions?
Well, they're potentially very significant, but again, I think we have to look at what General Burhan is doing. Here's a leader right now who's lost a lot of legitimacy and credibility given the domestic events unfolding inside Sudan. And so an attack of this nature really dovetails with the argument that he and the rest of the military in Sudan have been making for some time, which is this is a dangerous neighborhood, requires military leaders in charge of Sudan to ensure security for the country. And so they are, you know, demonstrating that they are up to this challenge. They're trying to, again, build back credibility by going through legitimate international organizations to seek redress. So you can see that there's some amount of posturing going on here by the Sudanese military. Whether or not this attack happens to be true or not, they're using it, I think, to bolster their own legitimacy and their own image internationally and domestically.
The border dispute between Sudan and Ethiopia over the fertile land in the vast Al-Fashaga region in eastern Sudan has been a major and long-standing stumbling block. This border dispute is fueling tensions between the two countries, which despite numerous rounds of negotiations have never yet reached an agreement on the demarcation of their border. What's the way out?
Well, I think the way out is the way back to the status quo before the conflict began, which was essentially viewing this as a soft border. You know, this is a largely agricultural area. I think what we have seen is in recent times, very powerful business interests in Sudan moving into this area, trying to commercialize and mechanize the agriculture in this area, which for a very long time has seen Ethiopian and Sudanese farmers mixing very peacefully. Again, this was subsistence-level agriculture. It was not large-scale commercial farming. I think as you've introduced more complicated and politically powerful business interests into this area, that is where we have seen the military become involved and complications arise. So I really do think that we need to go back to a kind of a soft border arrangement with some kind of understanding of how this territory will be treated.
That was Cameron Hudson, a senior associate at Center for Strategic and International Studies. He was speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shinawi. Ethiopia has named a team of seven negotiators for possible peace talks with Tigray. Earlier this month, Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed announced the formation of a committee to handle negotiations with Tigray's ruling party. Ethiopian Justice Minister Gedeon Timotheos said late yesterday the ruling Prosperity Party plans to end the war in northern Ethiopia peacefully. Deputy Prime Minister Demeke Mekonnen will lead the central government's negotiating team. Tigray's leaders have not commented on the announcement. According to the Associated Press, Tigray's top official, Debretsion Gebremichael, has written a letter to the international community saying his side is open to peace talks. However, he warned a willingness to join talks should not be misunderstood as a readiness to abandon principles. The African Union Special Envoy, former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo, has been traveling within Ethiopia in recent weeks as he tries to get both sides to talk. It remains unclear where the peace talks would happen. Tigray officials have said they are prepared to meet in Nairobi, the Kenyan capital, in negotiations facilitated by Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta. The M23 militants have forced government troops out of some of their positions in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The militants now are near the town of Tamuganga, within 50 kilometers linking the city of Goma to Rutsahuru, which could allow them to cut off reinforcements for government troops. Journalist Jafar Al-Katanti in the city of Goma spoke with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson about the latest developments.
Today in the territory of Rutsahuru, there was many attacks of M23 on FRDC position. Two attacks were in Jomba area where M23 attacked Rwanguba. And now when talking, Rwanguba is free under the FRDC control because M23 was attacking the city, but FRDC responded. But fighting still ongoing in the area of Itamugenga, where M23 passed the mountain of Shangi and tried to control the city of Tamugenga.
Just to clarify that again, they are now 15 kilometers from the road, the national road that connects Goma to Rutsahuru.
Yes, now they are fighting in Ruseke, and Ruseke is 15 kilometers to the road which connects Goma to Rutsahuru. And this road is very important for people, even for the FRDC during this war, because Goma is the biggest airport of Eastern Congo. So all reinforcements must land in Goma to go to the front line for FRDC. And Goma, as the biggest city of the Eastern Congo, also depends by the territory of Rutsahuru, because it's in Rutsahuru where food comes from. So if M23 control that area, they can also take the control of the road and block FRDC to get reinforcement and also people to get food.
That was reporter Jafar Al-Katanti in the eastern DRC city of Goma. He spoke to VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson. The M23 is a mainly Tutsi ethnic militia that arose in a rebellion against the DRC military a decade ago. It's one of the more than 100 armed groups in the eastern DRC. In 2013, M23 fighters captured much of the region, but eventually were pushed out of their positions. The past 6 months has seen a resurgence of M23 attacks. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Please note we have made our moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. A Senegal court Tuesday handed an opposition member of the parliament a 6-month suspended prison sentence and released another lawmaker for defying a ban on protests in the tense run-up to legislative elections. MPs Detti Fall and Mami Diara Fame were tried along with 82 other defendants at the court in the capital Dakar. They were arrested on June 17th during a rally the opposition called after its list of candidates for the elections were disqualified on technical grounds. Authorities had banned the rally, citing the risk of unrest. Fall, the main organizer of the demonstration, was given a 6-month suspended sentence and fined about $160. After a 14-hour trial, court president Ahmed Ba dismissed the case against Fam and saying the facts against her had not been sufficiently established. Ba also acquitted the other 82 co-defendants due to insufficient established facts. In South Africa, medical examiners have finished the autopsies on the bodies of 21 teenagers who died in a tavern early Sunday morning. Health department officials in the coastal city of East London have told VOA they are able to determine what caused the deaths after forensic samples have been analyzed. The victims were aged between 13 and 17, so the tragedy has sparked intense debate about the problem of underage drinking in South Africa. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Speaking on state television, Police Minister Becky Cele said the teenagers died as they danced. He added that the victims began collapsing shortly after 2 a.m. as they celebrated the beginning of school holidays. Others were celebrating a birthday. Photos and videos on social media show bodies strewn across the floor of the tavern. Others lie on tables and couches. A DJ who survived the incident, Brian Mapasa, told VOA someone sprayed gas or something into the air inside the bar. He said this caused panic and people stampeded toward the front door, the only entrance and exit point. But Mampasa explained the door was shut solid. He thinks by security guards unaware of what was happening inside and trying to prevent another crowd of youngsters from surging into the jam-packed establishment. Mapasa recalled he suddenly couldn't breathe and lost consciousness, waking up a few minutes later on the ground near the tavern, rescued by friends. Eastern Cape Community Safety Minister Weziwe Gotiwe says she's absolutely certain none of the victims was crushed to death, as initially reported.
What makes us to say there was no stampede is that there were three young people who came from the community who fainted when they were brought to us. One of those died on her way to the hospital. It means, therefore, what they ate or inhaled there was within their bodies. Hence, we are saying we are taking out the issue of stampede. We will wait for the results to come and we'll be able to pronounce on the result on what really had happened there.
Otiwe says Mapasa isn't the only witness to claim that someone sprayed a substance into the air as people partied. Health department officials say some of the survivors are being treated in hospital for intense body pains, including headaches and backaches, and continue to vomit sporadically. South African Council of Churches General Secretary Bishop Malusi Mpulwana says the tavern tragedy shows the country's becoming increasingly immoral.
These were school children, for whom a celebration of a birthday means a party at a shebeen. And not only that, we have got a culture of lawlessness.
He points out that the tavern, or shebeen, had a license to operate, which should mean it was inspected thoroughly by the liquor board. But he says this obviously didn't happen.
When you hear that there was one door for exit, how does that happen? What kind of community consultations could have happened that you should have a shebeen in the midst of a community this way? These challenges of shebeens in communities, where is the zoning system? We've got a lot of these problems in this country where somebody can just open a business without question. As long as I want to have my profits, I'll set up a business of whatever nature. It's happening. Whereas
Mpuwana says the government should invest as much money in anti-alcohol abuse programs as it claims it does in business initiatives, some of which fund township taverns. Relatives of victims are demanding justice. Police are guarding the bar following threats by the community to burn it to the ground. The police say the owners and managers of the tavern are cooperating with their investigation, but no arrests have been made yet. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Villagers in a western Cameroon town bordering Nigeria say armed men carried out a series of attacks over the weekend, killing about 30 people, including Nigerians. Community leaders in the town of Akwaya say one of two communities fighting over land hired separatist fighters to carry out the shootings, which the rebels deny. Moki Edwin Kendeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Community leaders say the intercommunal attacks from June 25 to 27 in Akwaya killed at least 30 people, including five Nigerian business people, and forced hundreds to flee the violence. Eno Daniel Kewong is the highest-ranking government health official in Akwaya on the border with Nigeria. He spoke to VOA via messaging app.
Since the incident was very horrific, we never had the courage to go to the field. So the injured were actually transported by relatives and villagers to the Presbyterian Health Center, where we attended to them. Most of the people that were brought had severe head injury, chest injuries, while a few had minor injuries. The severe injuries, we tried to stabilize them and referred them to neighboring Nigeria for continuation of care.
Cameroon Presbyterian Church official Samuel Fonky says an unknown number of the injured died while being evacuated to Nigeria. VOA could not independently verify if any injured from the attack arrived at Nigerian hospitals. Fonky says the ethnic Oliti accused the Mesaga Ekol people of hiring rebel fighters to carry out the attacks to try to force them from their land. Separatists denied they were responsible for the Akwaya killings and blamed unnamed armed groups operating across the border. Fonky says he was trying to organize peace talks between the two communities to end the violence when the weekend attacks occurred.
We're planning on how we can have peace talks to end the matter. And then this unfortunate incident took place where 30 people, including children, women, young girls, men, and the old, were massacred with support from some armed men. Some were even burnt in their houses. We want to plead that government should put a very strong military base in Akwaya, since that area is also near Nigeria.
Cameroon's government said troops have been deployed to protect civilians in Akwaya, but gave no further details. The intercommunal violence along the Nigerian border first broke out in April when villagers say at least seven people were killed and plantations were destroyed. Local clerics, community leaders, and village chiefs called a meeting to seek a solution to the conflict, but the disputing sides refused to attend. The allegation of rebels being hired guns will likely complicate peace efforts. English-speaking separatists in western Cameroon launched an armed rebellion in 2017 to break away from the country and its French-speaking majority. The government has blamed them for most atrocities committed in Cameroon's English-speaking western regions, while the rebels usually blame federal troops. The UN says the conflict has killed more than 3,300 people and displaced more than 750,000. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokvili Abaro, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.